The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind as part of Bite by Bite, a show, of course, both those run on Tony Curry Radio and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We're available on every major industry in our YouTube channel. And of course, I do the show every single week with Michael Coleman. He is the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. And Michael, we have a very special guest today.
Yeah, I'm real excited. It's taken us about 4 or 5 months of planning to be able to get this special lady. But before I introduce her, I want to kind of tell something that shows her impact. When I came to food banking and had to understand the relationship, so Feeding America's national office, you know, kind of sets the tone and kind of deals with everything on a national level. And they partner with 200 food banks, and all the counties are assigned to these food banks. And so it's really a unique relationship. And when I first got here, our food bank wasn't quite as engaged with the national organization and really didn't understand all that went on with that. And so when I came in, I remember my very first conference, and I was blown away as I began to learn about all the resources that Feeding America provides for us here on the ground. Feeding America, I mean, I've heard Claire say many, many times that, you know, they don't distribute food, but they empower us. They build this huge network and this vast network of support that enables us to do our job. And bottom line is, without them and what they do on a national level, we could not be close to the impact we're making. But I talked with somebody, even though we weren't that well connected at the time, she told me that she said, I said, I'm just so blown away at all the resources Feeding America. I've never seen anything like it. And she said, well, it wasn't like that in the past. And so I had never met Claire, but she said, that's their new CEO that's been there at the time about 4 years. And she said, they said, her name is Claire Babineau Fontenot. And I was like, well, you know what? If I run into her, I'm going to tell her. So the very first conference I went to in Philadelphia last year, she spoke to the group, and I went up to her and I said, look, I'm brand spanking new, but I just want to tell you that everybody in the food banking industry who deals with this every single day just has told me that you have totally transformed this organization. And so I bring her in. I'm so privileged to be able to talk with her and introduce her. So at this time, I would like to introduce Ms. Claire Babineau Fontenot, the CEO of Feeding America. Welcome, Claire.
Wow. Thank you so much. And I must say, Mike, that in a former life, I was the chief tax officer at a major retailer. And people had rather low expectations when they were going to hear me speak, you know, go grab coffee, what have you, think they're going to fall asleep because I'm going to get out there and talk about the Internal Revenue Code is what they were afraid of. So I'm not accustomed to this positive billing that I just got from you just a moment ago in terms of that intro. I'm going to have to live up to your high expectations.
Claire Babineau Fontenot joins us here, the Chief Executive Director, of course, of Feeding America, the nation's largest domestic hunger relief organization, along with Michael Coleman, the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. I'm Tony Curry. I was doing some research before we had you on, where you were doing an interview down in Puerto Rico. And you were talking roughly 37% of people in Puerto Rico have food deficiencies or have food insecurities. And based on the fact that obviously that is a U.S. property, what did you learn from being, I'm not even sure how old that interview was. It didn't look like it was that recent ago, but what did you learn about being not only off the mainland in an area like that and seeing how they deal with natural disasters and the things that bring them food insecurities? And what did that teach you about the mainland and how you deal with the people here in the United States?
Well, I can tell you when I was there, and maybe it'll be a time frame that other people resonate with. It would have been February in 2020. When we were starting to talk about this thing called COVID or coronavirus, or which one is it? Is it both? It was right before the shutdown. It's the last trip that I took before the shutdown is the second week in March. I came back the first week in March. I was there the last week to the first week around that time frame in March of 2020. And what I saw and learned is both gives me reason for optimism and should give us all reasons for optimism, and also help me to see in a different kind of way what the challenges are. I've been to every state, as I tell you. I've been to Alaska. I've been to Hawaii. I've been to Puerto Rico, as you mentioned. And I found similar things in each place. And what I saw was people being really, really thoughtful about how to create new ecosystems, how to acknowledge what's happening around hurricanes and the devastation there, how to put in place new infrastructure that assumes that we haven't seen the last hurricane that's going to hit Puerto Rico. I saw people coming together in partnership in powerful and important ways. We've got some work that we've been doing together in Puerto Rico around something we have, the Food Security Equity Impact Fund, which is a special fund that got created during the pandemic when we received a substantial gift. And we applied that gift to this fund. And the fund is designed to decrease disparities. And we found that disparities with food insecurity is inordinate in certain populations like communities of color and rural America. By the way, in the last food insecurity rates published by the USDA for last year, there was a substantial increase in food insecurity rates for whites and for people with higher income levels. We are all hungry in America, looks like every single one of us. We should come together around it. When we do, and when we get it right, everybody wins. Nobody loses if we promote thriving communities. Everybody wins when people have the nutrition they need to thrive. It's one of those kinds of 100% issues. So in Puerto Rico, we have some work that we're doing where people there are rolling their sleeves up and coming up with some fascinating innovations around food and eliminating food waste and reprocessing food waste into compost and using that compost for fertilizer and then growing fresh produce right there that does not have to get on a cargo ship in order to get to Puerto Rico. So fascinating, wonderful things happening all around.
Let me ask you, so I went over to Jackson, Mississippi, it was probably 8 months ago. Forgive me for the person that you have over economic mobility. And the reason she taught with us, and it was a fascinating discussion because that's kind of where my heart is anyway, workforce development and dealing with some of the root causes. And one of the things that I anticipate is when we start talking about food banks and people in this, you know, you naturally gravitate, you want to give people food, but you know, you're like, I also see some of the root causes and feel like I can impact that, not necessarily solve it, but just be a player in that. Hey, I see it. What resources, how can I help in that? But then you get some people look at that and go, well, maybe that's mission creep and, you know, you're getting in. So I know that Feeding America has been talking about this. That's kind of where my heart is as well, about transitioning over into dealing with some of the root causes of poverty, because we know that ultimately will affect the number of those coming to us. So can you talk about how you see that issue?
Yeah, sure. So first, people experiencing hunger tell us hunger doesn't exist in a vacuum. They tell us that opportunity has a lot to do with whether or not they find themselves in that line and whether or not they can get out of it. So when we care about people experiencing hunger, we care about what it is that puts them in the line, as well as making sure that we do a fabulous job when they show up in that line. Feeding America is a vast and diverse network. The national office certainly has taken positions that we believe on the policy front have the ability to really be transformational in the lives of people experiencing hunger. And then on the local level, we have many, many, many food banks who, especially coming out of COVID, when their communities were investing in their work in ways that were unprecedented. Never before have we seen those types of investments as we did during the height of COVID. They're emerging from COVID saying, what more might we do? So what I won't do is say, here in that community that I don't live in, insert name of community I don't live in, here's exactly how you need to solve for hunger in your community. And it's one way, and it's just like I would solve for it in the city that I'm from. I don't find that to be true. One of the things that makes Feeding America unique and part of our secret sauce is that we are so diverse. So 200 food banks, over 60,000 agency partners, meal programs, and pantries all across the country, serving tens of millions of people. So I encourage you to move down that path. Go ahead and try new things. Think about the systems that perpetuate people being food insecure. Think about workforce development. Think about economic mobilization. And we should be thinking about policies too. We have some systems, and sometimes people are really taken aback when they hear someone say, oh, you know, there are some systems that perpetuate poverty. And one of the systems, for instance, would be the one that I was talking about before in response to a question from Tony. If you actually have a system that says the moment I make $2 more, I lose all of these benefits, that system then tells you, don't take the raise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want a system that encourages people to be immobile? Or do we want a system that supports people in their mobility? So on the policy side, Feeding America ought to be talking about benefits cliffs. We ought to be creating and being invited and participating in tables of people that cut across all kinds of other artificial barriers like red state, blue state, purple state. I don't care what color the state is. What I care about is whether or not people get access to the food that they need. We partner. We are a nonpartisan organization. On the Hill, we partner with every possible party. Yes, we do. And sometimes I'll go in and see a member of one party and they'll say, and you shouldn't even go talk to those other people on the other side. And I'll smile and they'll look at me and they'll go, you're about to go talk to those people on the other side, aren't you? Like, uh-huh. Exactly. So I absolutely believe, but I think you first already know, and all of us should invest in understanding the unique circumstances of our own communities. We should ask ourselves, what are we well positioned to do that will matter?
Yeah, I tell you, thank you for that. I've been in this fight, and I love the community of Montgomery and surrounding community. But just to illustrate your point, Hyundai came here back in 2005 or so, and it was game changing. Because I was born and raised an hour south of here in Greenville, Alabama. And all the tier one plants and tier two plants that got set up in all these communities, now people can make enough money to, you know, it was just a benefit all the way around. But Hyundai is right outside. I mean, they extended the city limits, but the buses don't run to Hyundai. And they wrestle so much with high turnover. And to me, I'm just begging them, like talking. But now you've got other barriers. You've got a Korean, you know, culture that comes over this that doesn't see workforce development the same. And the city may want to do that, but doesn't have the resources. But then in the east end of Montgomery, where it's flourishing most on the far end, they have more manufacturers out that end, but the bus doesn't run that far out. So the greatest jobs and availability that could lift them. So this is something I talk about all the time. So if you have somebody who grows up and does not even have access to a licensed car when they're 16 to be able to, the one that's insured and registered to go, and that happens all the time. And then, so they're trapped in their neighborhood, what they can walk to or where they can take a bus to, which is typically going to be closer to minimum wage, no benefits. And the person with the transportation can get out to the better paying jobs. But people the average, you know, our friends and stuff, they don't understand that. I spoke to a school class one time. It was a class at Montgomery Academy, and there were 16-year-olds in there. And I said, everybody who has a car, raise your hand. Literally every kid in there raised the hand. And I said, you asked a different question than you asked the question, what kind of car am I going to get? It was just a foregone conclusion. Just like when you go home every night, you say, what are we going to eat tonight? You never have to go home and go, are we going to get to eat tonight? I mean, life of the questions. Now, I'm super happy for those kids, but it's a total disconnect from where the real challenges are to workforce development. So many people, if we could solve so many problems, if we could just connect some of these links together. And that's what motivates me. Yes, my heart is in food banking, but it's really for the people who are coming to the food bank. And if I can advocate and close some of those other links, that's what motivates me to want to get in that space a little bit.
Go ahead. No, it's so wonderful to have you on this week, because obviously we're recording the show here on Monday, and Thanksgiving is on Thursday. It's the biggest eating day of the year. And I know we're kind of running out of time, but I had to ask you one final question before we let you go. You mentioned at the beginning of this interview that you have 107 brothers and sisters. How do you spend your holidays? I want to know.
Well, I spend my holidays by doing what my mama taught me, which is going back to Opelousas. So I'll be heading to Opelousas tomorrow, where I will be eating lots and lots of incredible food. And I hope, as we do come to a close, I want to thank both of you for inviting me. I want to thank the people who will hear the sound of my voice. I want you to know that every investment you've made in our collective work has been an investment in your community, and that it makes a difference. And people tell me thank you all the time for the work you do. So I get to say thank you back to all of you, both of the two of you on this show, and everyone who will hear the sound of my voice. Thank you so much. And on the subject of thanks, I do want to end with this, if you don't mind. At Thanksgiving, I hope as we come together and we're around these tables and we have so much abundance, I hope we reflect on the fact that not everybody gets the chance to sit around such tables. When we think about how important it is to knitting our family together, that even if we live far away, we come home for these holidays. I hope we think about families that don't have that privilege. And I hope we think about it not only for Thanksgiving, but that beyond Thanksgiving too, that this is a daily challenge for so many people. And the good news is we, the American public, just extraordinarily innovative, extraordinarily compassionate, extraordinarily generous. We need to decide that that's not acceptable. And when we decide that it's not acceptable for people to not have access to the basic food that they need, then we are going to do something powerful about it. And I want to be a part of that.
Amen. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're so generous with your time. And thank you for your thoughts and the life. And again, your leadership example. You really embolden us. And I'll just add one more thing. I wanted to echo what you said about 200 different ways to do this. Not once has Feeding America ever told me how to serve the people in our community. All you've said is, how can we help you do it better? And we're here, and giving us that flexibility to create and see what works and what doesn't work. The best lessons I've learned are when I've had the biggest failures in my life. So thank you for giving us that space, and I hope you have a blessed Thanksgiving and rest of your holiday season.
There's no doubt. I am blessed, and it will be a blessing.
Thank you both.
So the real question is going to be, do you have any good ideas about how to take off about 10, 15 pounds?
I do not.
Oh, no.
That'll be our next podcast. How's that?
Right. Thank you both.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.